Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today, the markets were today is February 6, 2019, and the markets were down just a tad. The Dow closing at 25,390, the NASDAQ at 7375, and the S&P at 2731. Our topic tonight is reviewing the new tax forms. What a treat. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. While I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, and you can use that to talk live with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori, and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So, talking about reviewing the new tax forms, I want to break this down into several sections tonight. So, number one, I'm going to review a summary of changes. Number two, I want to alert folks of what they still would need to watch out for, because sometimes it's been sold as very simple, and if you take it to heart and think it's very simple, I don't want you to miss things that may impact you at the state level, for example. So number one, summary of changes. Number two, what to still watch out for. Number three, the tax form could be simpler for many, many people. For anyone who's doing it by hand, it could be much more complicated, but simpler for many more people, and possibly simpler for people who still use software or I'm not sure how the online programs will work, but we'll talk about why it would be simpler in a minute. And then which forms, when we say the change in the tax forms, what kind of forms might you have to pay attention to or watch out for? And then if I have time, I'll talk a little bit about some business implications for people who have businesses or small businesses, and I'll tag that on to the end. So for regular listeners, you know I love government websites that offer free information, and it's available to all of us and hopefully has been vetted and kind of reviewed for accuracy and such things. So when I looked for summarizing the changes for the tax forms for 2018, I went right to the source, to the IRS website, and found that they have a little booklet, which was really quite helpful, and it's called Tax Reform Basics for Individuals and Families. So Tax Reform Basics for Individuals and Families, it's publication 5307, and it's available on the IRS website. It is for 2018. It is several pages. I don't know if I have page numbers on this thing, but it is several pages, and 12 pages about. And it goes over some of the tax changes. I'm not going to go over all of them, so I'm just going to start with kind of a little bit of a summary of some of the things that changed and why we should talk about them before we talk about the tax forms. Okay, so overview of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So you'll hear people say TCJA. They always have to have these little acronyms. So major tax reform that affects both individuals and businesses was enacted in December 2017, and it's commonly referred to as the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So basically, they start by saying using tax preparation software is the best and simplest way to file a complete and accurate tax return. That software will guide you through the process and it does all the math. This, of course, has always been true. That is one of the probably biggest issues that the, and I'm not quoting any statistics here, but it's just from recall, that in the past there was always an issue when people would manually do their returns as far as mistakes on the tax return. A lot of times it would be subtracting and addition, subtraction and addition. And so that would require, you know, additional correspondence from the IRS and things like that. So software really took away a lot of those math errors, which has been great. Using software will be particularly helpful going forward because of the what has become simpler has also become more complex, and I'll explain that as I go. So IRS recommends software. Electronic filing options include IRS Free File for taxpayers who qualify. So you can go on the IRS website and look for free tax filing software that may be available to you. Quite often that is the federal tax filing, and for the state sometimes there may be a charge for that. I haven't looked at that in a long time, so I'm not sure what's available for that. And then there are free file fillable forms for all taxpayers. And then, of course, commercial software and professional assistance. The IRS also offers volunteer income tax assistance and tax counseling for the elderly. There's programs for that, and which offer free tax help. And I expect that they must have more information on their website for that as well, if you would be interested in exploring that. So the IRS website, irs.gov, G-O-V for gov, would help you give you some additional information. So one of the things that changed, of course, with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act were a change in tax rates. So for 2018, most of the rates were reduced, and a lot of people will pay less taxes. Just talking to Shandi right before the show started, that there's been like a Twitter fury over people being surprised that they're owing taxes when they thought their taxes went down. Well, what might have taken people by surprise is that if you were used to having a certain amount withheld from your paycheck and you had a particular, you know, filing status and exemptions with your employer, if you didn't update your W-4 and change your withholdings or factor in all the other considerations that may have impacted you for the new tax, platform in 2018, then your withholdings might have come down at work, but you didn't adjust for maybe other income that you had on your return or deductions that you were no longer going to have. So hence the surprise, some people will owe more taxes. Some people are going to benefit and get refunds where they may not have had in the past, even if the withholdings were reduced, because they are now maybe in a lower tax bracket than they were in 2017 because the tax rates came down, the tax brackets were expanded. And so people in other incomes may benefit from those lower tax rates on, you know, higher amounts of income. So the rates are now 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%, 32%, 35%, and 37%. And, you know, in 2017, they went up to 39.6% and then quite often had tagged on some extra taxes depending on how much other investment income or wages you had over certain thresholds. So tax rates came down. Another change was that may surprise some people who have children was a change in what we call the kiddie tax and the tax rates that may apply to children, but really on their unearned income. So if your children only have like a W-2 from a college job, probably not going to impact them as far as this kiddie tax. But if they have unearned income, interest, dividends, capital gains, they may be subject to new tax rates. And I'll talk about those when I get back from my first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Steve Aronson. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters. Plus, interviews, concert information, archived concerts, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And tonight we are talking about reviewing the new tax forms. And I am starting with a summary of changes. And then I'm going to move into talking about what to watch out for and the simplicity that they have, you know, conveyed will be to people. And a lot of people will have a simpler tax filing. And for many others, there will be new forms that you may not be familiar with. So I'm going to go over those. And if I have time, I'll give some business updates. So mentioning again that this booklet is quite helpful. Tax Reform Basics for Individuals and Families, publication 5307, available on the IRS website, irs.gov. Real quick, I wanted to just touch on if you have children who have wages, you know, you have to file a tax return for them, depending on if they have federal withholding and how much income it is and if they're under certain thresholds. So basically, if a child has just wages, then they still could get a standard deduction for those wages up to $12,000. It's not to exceed $12,000. But the children, if they have unearned income, like interest and dividends and things like that, they could be subject to what they call the kiddie tax. The kiddie tax threshold is $2,100. And if their investment income, the IRS gives us, I think, like an extra $350 on that. Let me just see if I have that. Yeah, I think it's an extra $350. So it's like Well, they have it as $2,550 here. The new tax rates applicable to a child's unearned income of more than $2,550 used to be would at the parents' tax rates. That's what we called the kiddie tax, and you'd have to file the parents' tax return before you calculated the child's tax return. But it's no longer attached to the parents' tax rates or their tax situation at all. They have their own tax rates. And guess what? They are the same rates that we use for estates and trust. And the income tax rates on income more than $2,550 are 24% starting. Then it goes up to 35% and 37%. So those tax rates go up quite quickly. So it might be time if your children have high unearned income to, you know, reevaluate the portfolio and what kind of income you want and in your child's portfolio. All right. They mention in the same booklet about the federal income tax withholding may need adjustment. You may need to do that if you didn't already and you have other income on your tax return, because the withholdings through your employer are only covering the income that they're aware of while you're employed. You might have other income on your return, like interest, dividends, a second job, pensions, Social Security. Maybe you're working part-time while you're collecting Social Security. And your employer obviously is not aware of any of that. And maybe in the past, the withholdings you had done through your work or your job covered all the tax on your other income, and maybe it's not anymore. So you're just going to have to reevaluate that. There's lots of other information in this booklet, but I'm only going to cover a few things. They do have a withholding calculator on the IRS's website and information on how to update your W-4, talking about making estimated payments or additional tax payments and things like that. One of the big changes we saw with tax reform was the changes to the standard deduction. And the standard deduction is a dollar amount that reduces the amount of income on which you are taxed and varies according to your filing status, your tax filing status. So the standard deduction is going to reduce the income that's subject to tax, and the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act doubled or nearly doubled the standard deduction. This is why there's going to be big changes for a lot of people. When you take the standard deduction, you will no longer itemize. Well, you would take the standard deduction only if it's more than the deductions you would have if you itemized. But here's what happened. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act eliminated a lot of deductions for people such that people who itemized in the past aren't going to have as much deductions, at least going forward through this tax legislation. And if they have less to itemize, now they may be under that standard deduction amount. Now they're going to be taking the standard deduction. More and more people will be taking the standard deduction. So the standard deduction for single people is $12,000. And in 2017, it was only $6,350. Married people, it's $24,000. And in 2017, it was only $12,700. Head of household is now $18,000, and it was only $9,350 in 2017. But what's the difference? What happened in 2018? Well, they almost doubled the standard deduction, but they took away exemptions. So for a lot of people, they might have taken a standard deduction, but they also got an exemption for maybe the husband, maybe the wife, maybe the child or two. And that exemption would give them extra deductions against that income. But those were eliminated. The exemptions were eliminated. We don't have to count how many people anymore. But to kind of offset taking away the exemptions for those children or other dependents, they brought in something called the child tax credit. So they're upping a child tax credit for people who have dependents under age 17. There's some other requirements, but basically your kids who are under age 17, you get a tax credit. And that tax credit is, I believe, about $2,000. I'll look that up. We'll get to that. Let me see here. $2,000 per qualifying child. And it's up to $1,400 of the credit is refundable. All right. So the child tax credit got bumped up. So it's a higher amount that hopefully will offset the tax that the tax savings you would have had from the exemption. So they kind of tried to make it offset. They made some of it refundable. But here's the thing. They also expanded the income thresholds for filers who would be eligible for taking this now. So they increased the income thresholds for married filing joint folks up to $400,000. It's incredible. It's a huge amount. So people who probably were higher earners who had not been eligible to take the child tax credit in the past, we did have one in the past. It was just a lot smaller, $1,000. So in the past, they may not have been eligible for it. Now they've expanded that income threshold so much, more people will probably be eligible for that income tax credit. So again, the people who might be complaining about owing more taxes, maybe they weren't someone who had children. They weren't someone who's going to benefit from these tax credits. Single people, it's $200,000. There's a phase out after those amounts. And then there's also a credit for other dependents. This is new, a new credit of up to $500. And this is a tax credit, very different than a deduction. A tax credit is available for each of your qualifying dependents other than children who can be claimed for the child tax credit. So the qualifying dependent must be a U.S. citizen, U.S. national, U.S. resident alien. The credit is calculated with the child tax credit in the form instructions. The total of both credits is subject to a single phase out when the adjusted gross income is over those amounts. But it includes maybe those children, those college kids who are over age 17. It could include other relatives in your household. So that's something you're going to have to go through and pay attention to. That might not be as simple as someone might think. So that was a big change, the standard deduction, the child tax credit. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about itemized deductions and how those change, because that is one of the biggest questions we're getting right now. Is it worth it for me to itemize? What do I have to pay attention to? So we'll cover that when we get back. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about reviewing the new tax forms tonight. I'm starting with the summary of changes, because in order to understand the changes in the tax forms, we kind of have to understand a little bit about the changes. Itemized deductions, biggest question we're getting. Do I itemize this year? Should I? Didn't that go away? I'm told I'm not going to be able to do it anymore. Well, it all depends. It still depends on people's individual circumstances. The best place to start is pulling out your 2017 tax return to see what kind of numbers you deducted in the prior year, and then decide if you still have those categories available to you and if the amounts that you deducted in the prior year changed substantially one direction or another. So what happened with itemized deductions? Well, a few things. In the past, there was a little bit of a limit on overall itemized deductions. They took that away, and I think they took it away because a lot of people aren't going to itemize anymore, so what difference does it make? The deduction for medical and dental expenses was modified. It was going to 10% of your page one income, meaning if your page one income is $100,000 and 10% of that is $10,000, and you had $10,000 of medical expenses, well, then guess what? You don't get any medical deduction. But if your page one income is $50,000 and 10% of that is, well, it's not 10% anymore. Sorry, they took away the 10%. It's now 7.5%, 7.5% of your page one income. So if your page one income is $100,000 and your medical expenses exceed $7,500, then you're going to get to, put that on Schedule A as your deductible medical expenses, but you still may not be able to deduct them. It all depends on if your Schedule A other items together with that medical amount adds up to over $24,000 if you're married filing joint, $12,000 if you're single. By the way, if you're over 65, you get an extra little deduction too. So married couples get another $1,300 each if you're over 65, both of you over 65. So a standard deduction for a couple over age 65, their standard deduction is $26,600. So first you plunk in that medical amount. And then you say, what other things can I deduct? Oh, state and local taxes, real estate taxes. I pay a boatload in real estate taxes. I pay a boatload in state and local taxes. Well, they capped that. We talked about this in, other shows. They capped that at 10,000. So now let's say my medical expenses, $2,500. My real estate taxes, state and local taxes were, 20, and I'm capped at 10. So $2,500 of medical, $10,000 of taxes. So now I'm at 12,500. I'm nowhere near, $24,000. What else can I still deduct? Mortgage interest. I can still deduct mortgage interest. There are some limitations on that. Most of us don't have to worry about these limitations. Limitation is qualified residence loan balance. Your loan can't be more than $1 million on your property. Your mortgage interest would be deductible if it's $1 million or less. If it's more than that, it starts shaving away the amount you can deduct. Going forward, for homes purchased after December 31st, 2017, the deduction for interest is limited to $750,000 of loan balance. And so Those are pretty big, big numbers. Let's pretend your mortgage interest is $5,000. So we have the $2,500 for medical. We have the $10,000 for our real estate and state and local tax cap. And what did I say? $5,000 for mortgage interest. So I'm at $17,500. What other categories are still available? Charitable giving. Let's say give $5,000 to charity. So now I'm at $22,500. As you go down the old Schedule A, you'll see a section called miscellaneous itemized deductions. That has gone away. So what kind of deductions did we used to get to deduct if we were over certain thresholds? Things like asset management fees, tax preparation fees, safe deposit boxes, things like that. So those are gone. That's what's gone. So people who had those deductions are no longer available. So if your itemized deductions are less than your standard deduction, you are not going to be filing a Schedule A. Shawnee, we have a call on line two, Michelle from Easton. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. How can I help you?
My question is this. You were talking about child, and my verbiage is not going to be right, but the child tax credit, like the $1,000 went to $2,000 for your dependents.
Mm-hmm.
And I have three children. Two of them are little.
Mm-hmm.
My third is 17. Mm-hmm. She turned 17 in the tax year. But she was a junior in high school. You were talking about it earlier about college kids. I can understand that, but she's my most expensive child, and she's a junior in high school. And then, so this is going to be next year too, that this is going to happen. And I thought that I would be able to do the personal exemption because I'm not going to be able to claim her in the standard way. And the personal exemption is gone. So now it's just a $500 tax credit. I mean, correct. Am I missing something or is that really what's happening to me?
That is what's happening to you.
So it looks like when I did my taxes, but I haven't submitted them, it looks like that I have lost around $3,000 now.
Well, hopefully the tax rates. Sorry, Michelle, can you turn your radio down?
It's in my car in the phone.
Oh, okay. The tax rates are going down a little bit, so I would hope that you wouldn't have been impacted that much, but you might have had other things, you know, correspondingly occur. But yeah, that $500, once they're, it's only if they're under 17, do you get the $2,000 tax credit per child. Some of it's refundable. So to the extent that tax credit can offset your taxes, if you totally wipe it out with the other child tax credits, you can still get a refundable amount, but you will only get a $500 tax credit for your daughter. But you know, even under the old rules, you would have had the exemption. You wouldn't have received the tax credit any longer though. So
right, that I know, but I would have had that exemption, which I thought was around $4,000.
Yeah. Yeah. But
that is no more, and I can't itemize anymore either.
Right. So you're one of those people who might get impacted more than you realized or thought. The only other thing I would say is you can look to see if you can save some taxes by, you know, putting money in an IRA, a deductible IRA, if you're eligible for that. If there's any child care expenses, there's still a child care credit that may be available to you.
I have before and after care for my little ones. I spent about $13,000,
yeah,
and my deduction was $1,200.
Right.
So it's the middle class, which is really, we're kind of gone now, are getting, it's not really helping us.
Yeah. Well, one other thing I'll mention that you want to watch out for is if through work you have, and you may already be doing it, but if through work you have a flexible spending account, there is dependent care that you can do through your flexible spending account. And depending on what tax bracket you're in, that could save you more in taxes on, you know, what you can put away through the flexible spending account on part of it. You can never max that out. It's up to $6,000 for two kids, and I'm just going to pretend, don't tell me any of your income, but if you're in a, you know, a 24% tax bracket on $6,000, you could save $1,440 of just income tax by doing the flexible spending account. And then it's also, I think, exempt from the Medicare tax. And so some of that helps as well.
Okay. That sounds good. Now, is that I can't get any of that money back, but can I carry it over to the next year?
No, what happens is you put it in the flexible spending account. You use that to pay your child care, but your employer isn't taxing you on any of that money. And then it's reported on your W-2. When you go to file your tax return, you show $6,000 was covered through your flexible spending account, and you're going to save taxes up front and maybe even a little more than you would get on your tax return. Okay. But you do that through open enrollment if your company offers a flexible spending account. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Michelle. Thank you for calling
in. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye. Folks, we're at our halfway point. And when I come back, I'll answer Wendy's question from Bethlehem. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1, it's 6:30. Your current temperature is 43. Tonight, you're going to be patchy fog, low around 37. Thursday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 48. Thursday night, showers with a low around 41. Friday, mostly cloudy with a high near 52. Friday night, low around 22. And Saturday is going to be sunny with a high near 33. And Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 17 degrees. Sunday is mostly sunny with a high near 37. And Sunday night, a chance of snow showers, mostly low around 26. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or off air. If you're not comfortable talking live, just call in your question as Wendy did. Wendy asked, itemizing any part of the mortgage, can I list the changes? So let me kind of recap this, because the change probably isn't in mortgage interest deduction, probably isn't going to affect a lot of people, unless, of course, you have something called a home equity line of credit or HELOC or line of credit. Basically, for mortgages, which is, you know, a loan secured by your home, mortgage interest that you pay, you're going to get a 1098. If that mortgage interest is on a loan less than $1 million for people who bought their home pre December 15th, 2017, or $750,000 loan after that date, if you're under those amounts and you have mortgage interest, it could be itemized if, when added to your other deductions on Schedule A, are over the standard deduction. So for a lot of people who have big mortgages, new homes, you may still be able to itemize when you add your mortgage interest to the taxes, again, capped at $10,000, whether you're single or married, filing joint, if they're over the $24,000 under 65 years old, okay? So mortgage interest, if the mortgage interest is $10,000 and the tax is capped at $10,000, we're only at 20. If our charitable contributions are $4,000, we're at 24. Our standard deduction is 24. It won't matter if we itemize or not. Use standard deduction. If my mortgage interest is $14,000, my tax cap is 10, I'm at 24. And now if I do charitable giving of $4,000, now my itemized deduction is going to be 28. So as long as when we add up the items on our Schedule A, basically for most people, what it would be is the taxes, the mortgage interest, and charitable giving. For some people, if their medical is so high that it exceeds 7.5% of their adjusted gross income, so basically their page one income, if their medical expenses out of pocket using after-tax dollars, not the medical we do through our work, if we're doing pre-tax medical contributions through work, those don't count. We're already getting the tax benefit from them. So if our after-tax medical out-of-pocket costs exceed 7.5% of our page one income, that's one of the categories. The state, local, and real estate taxes are another category. Mortgage interest is a category. I think there's still some investment interest expense that could be deductible, and charitable contributions. That's kind of basic. So if you're over the standard deduction amount, you would still itemize. For people who have mortgages bigger than that, there's, you know, you start shaving some of it off. So I hope that helps, Wendy. But there are going to be a lot of people who in the past itemized will not be itemizing because the standard deduction is higher. So in the past, though, those same people who itemized also got those exemptions like we were talking about with Michelle earlier. So we were used to itemizing and getting the exemptions. Now the exemptions are gone and we might be taking the standard deduction, so we're not, you know, getting as big of deduction. So that is going to impact some people. Just be, you know, hopefully you did planning and knew what was coming. But I want to mention, though, here's the thing about, I mentioned mortgage interest, and I was trying to be careful about what I said, what you used to buy your home with. Here's the kicker that a lot of people aren't ready for, and they might not get. If you have a home equity loan, line of credit, that kind of thing, and you took it out to pay off debts, to pay your kids' college tuition, to pay your credit cards, to pay for a trip to Europe, to buy a new car, whatever it did, even though it's secured by your home, because it wasn't acquisition or improvement indebtedness, that is no longer deductible. So that is one of those areas that I think will be one of the more confusing things for people. So if you used a home equity line of credit, a home equity loan, whatever it might be outside of the regular mortgage, and it's used for something other than acquisition debt or improvements for your home, it's personal and is not going to be deductible. That could bring some people down out of the itemizing deductions. Charitable contributions, real quick, they did raise the limit. It's rare that I've ever seen anyone who's limited on their charitable giving, but typically charitable giving to itemize your deduction, it's limited to no more than, if it's cash, no more than 50% of your page one income. They changed that to 60% of your page one income. So some people who were in the past limited, that gives them a little bit extra benefit. As I mentioned, the miscellaneous itemized deductions were gone. Deduction exclusion for moving expenses, that was suspended. So the deduction for moving expenses is suspended. Unless you're a member of the U.S. military on active duty, you cannot deduct moving expenses, and amounts reimbursed by an employer will be taxable income. Some people might not be ready for that. We talked about the child tax credit already, the additional child tax credit. Personal exemptions suspended, those are gone. And then that credit for other dependents, that $500. Alternative minimum tax exemption, there were so many changes with the itemized deductions and those miscellaneous things. Those, in the past, when we had alternative minimum tax, basically it said we're going to compare the regular tax to an alternative minimum tax. The alternative minimum tax was taking all your income and then, you know, eliminating some of your deductions or adding on certain income and then recalculating it. Well, a lot of the deductions they were taking away for the alternative minimum tax calculation aren't there anymore anyway. So a lot of people are not going to be subject to alternative minimum tax anymore. They increased the exemption. They took away a lot of those preference items. So probably not a lot of people are going to be subject to that anymore. Another area of confusion is for alimony. Some people thought, oh gosh, I was, you know, getting alimony and I heard I don't have to report it anymore. And other folks were saying, oh, I pay alimony and I used to get a deduction. I'm not going to anymore. For people who had a divorce decree or separation agreement pre-December 31st of 2018, you still can deduct alimony if you're paying it, and you have to declare as income alimony if you're receiving it. But for divorces after that date, you no longer get to deduct it if you're paying it, and you also don't report it if you're receiving it. So I'm pretty sure a lot of divorces are going to now settle with asset division, would be my guess. A lot of, you know, people are probably not going to want to pay alimony if they're not going to get a deduction for it. So they might get creative on how they're settling divorce cases. Repeal of deduction for amounts paid in exchange for college athletic event seating rights. So people who were doing a contribution to Penn State and getting, you know, tickets and taking it as a nonprofit, you know, charitable deduction, if they were getting it for the seats, that's not going to be deductible anymore. Reporting health care coverage under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, you must continue to report coverage, qualify for an exemption, or report an individual shared responsibility payment for tax year 2018. After 2018, there is no longer the mandate for the health insurance coverage. It's not going to be, you know, reportable going forward. But for 2018, you all still should be receiving those forms 1095. It's a 1095A if you've got marketplace insurance, 1095B if you have employer-provided insurance, and 1095C if you bought insurance directly through the insurance company. That 1095 is where you're going to get the information for if you had coverage for the year and for whom you had the coverage for 2018. Last year, I had someone tell me, yep, I had coverage. I had coverage. And did you have it through the exchange? No, I had coverage, though. Okay. Well, then they got a notice from the IRS saying that they owed a lot more in money because they actually did not have coverage. So you got to be careful with that. There is tracking and tracing of all of that. But going forward, after 2019, we're not going to have to worry about it anymore. But 2018, you still have to worry about it. Retirement plans, they used to let us do Roth conversion. So we convert our IRA money to a Roth, pay tax on it. And then, you know, by the extension due date of that tax return that we had, you know, done the conversion, the market tanks and we decide, oh gosh, we shouldn't have done that conversion, doggone it, I want to change my mind. They would let us change our mind. We could recharacterize it. You can't do that anymore. So once you do a Roth conversion, an IRA to a Roth, you no longer can change your mind. So you just want to be sure about doing it when you do it. For some folks, it might behoove you to wait till the end of the year to make a decision about whether you want to convert or not, depending on what direction the market might be going. All right. Let me just see if there's anything else in this tax reform basics for individuals and families. Again, this information is available on the IRS's website, irs.gov, publication 5307. One other thing I was going to mention, there was another, and there's more changes than this. I'm just trying to highlight a bunch. 529 plans, college savings accounts, that's what we call them, college savings accounts. Well, let's just call them education 529s because they changed the rules that we can now use 529s for children in private schools for up to $10,000 of tuition in total. So you can have five different 529s, but you can't use more than $10,000 total toward tuition for that particular beneficiary. So you can use it for K through 12, $10,000 tuition. All right. So those were some of the summary of changes. What I wanted to make sure I mentioned, what to watch out for, as I say, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You might think, well, I'm not going to get to itemize. I'm not going to worry about putting this information together, my medical expenses, my real estate taxes. And so you go to enter your income into your tax software. You enter your W-2s, your interest, your dividends, whatever. So you enter your income and you forget about all the rest of the stuff because, you know, you're not itemizing. Well, keep in mind, there still might be some deductions you would get for the state. For example, Pennsylvania still allows unreimbursed employee business expenses. That's a UE form, PAUE, for union dues or uniforms, small tools, things like that. So you might still want that information for that. Some people might be eligible if you're over a certain age or disabled. You might be eligible for a rent rebate or, a tax rebate, real estate tax rebate from Pennsylvania, depending on how much income you have. You need your real estate taxes for that. New Jersey residents, you get a real estate tax deduction, whether you itemize or not, on your New Jersey return. You also get a deduction for medical expenses if they exceed a certain amount. 2% of your adjusted grossing or your taxable income, I believe, for New Jersey. I'm not looking at a form. I'm just remembering this off the top of my head. So New Jersey residents, you still might want to go through You might want to still go through your checkbook to look for those medical expenses that you had and look at your pay stub because some of your medical deductions through your employer are still subject to New Jersey tax. And so you want to take that deduction on New Jersey. It's quite a complicated calculation. New York, you might still itemize for New York, even though you're not itemizing for federal. Certain states, you might want to itemize both for federal and state, even though your itemized deductions for federal might be less than your standard deduction. You might elect to itemize because it might give you a bigger benefit on your state return, like in Virginia. So you really want to be careful about not missing out on some of those deductions that may be impacted on your state return. So when we come back from this last break, we're going to talk for about 1 minute on the simpler form, 1040, and then we're going to try to talk about some of these schedules that come into play and how that is what can make this a little bit more complicated. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails, discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And folks, I know I've probably been talking a little fast tonight because there's just so much to kind of cram in. But podcasts are always available at wdiy.org or on our own website, yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can scroll through the list of shows and listen at your leisure. Because there is a lot of information. And I also want to mention next week, we are doing listeners' tax questions. So if you have tax questions, you can write those down and call in next week as well, or send them through the website, and I'll answer those on air next week. And I usually will also answer via email too. I'm not really giving tax advice. It has to be general, you know, kind of tax questions because this is educational. So real quick, talking about the simpler tax form, 1040, which is where they were going. So 1040 EZ, 1040A, those are gone. It's now just a 1040, and it was supposed to be the size of a postcard. So what they did is they put it on, you know, a half page, page one with your name, address, social security numbers, your dependents, and then your signature line, and then a second page, or maybe it's a card they flip over. I haven't seen a physical one. I just printed it off the website. Another half page where it has totals for wages, interest, dividends, IRAs, Social Security. Then it totals it. But then there's all kinds of like little tiny, you know, extra things on it. So it looks like it's simple. But if you have anything a little bit more complicated, that's when, you know, we start adding to it. So if you had just one W-2, very easy. An IRA, pretty easy. A pension, pretty easy. It's when we start adding things like interest income and dividend income and capital gains where it can get a little bit more complicated. So in some circumstances, that is pretty easy. So what happened with the 1040? So what they're calling it is a building block approach. And the federal tax return, the goal was to put it to a very simple form. But then if you need to supplement that very, very simple form, there are new numbered schedules if you need them. So you need to figure out if you need them. And one of the things I looked at when I looked at the simple form, and I saw line item 2, tax-exempt interest is line 2A and taxable interest is line 2B. And that's all it says. And you're led to believe simple form, I just put in those amounts. But if you actually went to the instructions, it would tell you if your interest income or dividend income is more than $1,500, you actually still have to fill out that Schedule B. And then the Schedule B will tell you where to put the income. So here are some of the extra schedules. So for Form 1040, there is now a Schedule 1 for additional income and adjustments to income. Taxpayers use this schedule to report items such as capital gains, unemployment, compensation, prize or award money, gambling winnings, deductions such as student loan interest, self-employment tax, and educator expenses. So they took some of the line items off the 1040 to make it look a little bit simpler, but then they just put it on Schedule 1. And when you go to Schedule 1, that's where you see all this other income. What's funny about this Schedule 1 is it has income items like line 1 through 21, and it totals line at line 22, and it says carry this to form lines to item, sorry, carry it forward to the 1040 line 6. But if you have adjustments to income, continue. So then you do the adjustments to income. That's things like the educator expense, health savings account deduction, moving expenses for the armed forces, self-employment tax deduction. And then you add those up. But it doesn't tell you what to do with them. It just has a total. It doesn't tell you what to do with them. But if you go back to page 2 of the 1040, it tells you that if you have total income and you had to use Schedule 1, so other income, add lines 1 through 5 and add any amount from Schedule 1. Schedule 1, again, being additional income, including all of those things I mentioned, taxable refunds, alimony, capital gains, business income, rental income, farm income, unemployment compensation. It says add the amount from Schedule 1, line 22. But then you have to keep reading. It says, if you have no adjustments to income, then you enter the amount from line 6. Otherwise, you have to subtract line 1, line 36 from line 6. So that's where it tells you what to do with the adjustments to income. So if you're doing a return by hand, it could be very painful. So I think of any years, it's really probably an important year to take advantage of electronic filing. Again, through if you want free filing software, go to irs.gov to see if you qualify for it. And I believe there's income thresholds. But you want to really pay attention to electronic filing this year because you input it and hopefully the software knows where to put all of these different parts of income. So there's a Schedule 1 for additional income and adjustments to income. There's a Schedule 2 for tax, and that's for people who might owe the alternative minimum tax or they have to pay back a premium tax credit on that health insurance if they took an advanced credit for their health insurance that they bought on the marketplace. If they have to pay something back, that would be reported on that Schedule 2. Schedule 3, non-refundable credits. So taxpayers use this schedule to claim a non-refundable credit other than the child tax credit, such as a foreign tax credit, an education credit, or a general business credit. Those are non-refundable credits, although some of the education credits are refundable. So that's kind of... I'd have to see how that works through. Schedule 4, other taxes. This is for taxpayers to use to report other taxes they owe and must pay, such as self-employment tax, household employment taxes, additional taxes on IRAs, etc. And Schedule 5, other payments and refundable credits. So while they made the form look simple, they just took kind of extra line items and put them on all these extra schedules. And then you marry the schedule to the page 1 or the page 2 of the 1040. Now, what is not also written in here is all of these schedules, when you actually go to them, the schedules refer you to all of these other forms that we had before. So you still might have to go fill out the child tax credit on form 2441, but then that credit is going to flow through over to some other, you know, schedule. And that's where I think it can get a little confusing for people. Okay. I don't think I even want to talk about that anymore. So software. And get help if you need it, irs.gov, and look for either free filing software or free fillable forms, or if you're elderly or needy, there is other volunteer assistance programs. Let me quickly try to talk about some of the changes for businesses that we had. And the reason I mention this is because there are a lot of people out there who are small business people. The IRS, I think, says small business owners are $25 million of revenue or less. Well, I'm talking about some small business people who might be doing, certain home sale products or consulting and things like that. So it's still important for you to know some of the changes. So there is a new deduction for qualified business income. They call it of pass-through entities. The new provision, also known as Section 199A, so that's the Internal Revenue Code Section, 199A, allows a deduction of up to 20% of qualified business income for owners of some businesses. There's a key point. So this isn't simpler because it's some businesses. So you have to go figure out if you're one of those businesses. And the limits apply based on income and type of business. So some businesses, based on some kind of income and some type of business. That is very complicated. But the good news is for business owners who, I believe, married filing joint is under $315,000, and single, I think, is half that. For people who make under that amount, you would be eligible for 20% of this qualified business income deduction without going through too many hoops. But if you are a service business, and basically a service business, lawyers, accountants, doctors, healthcare professionals, consultants. So a lot of the self-employed people I might see, you retire and you were a professional, executive, whatever, you retire and you go consult and do consulting, with other businesses. That's consulting that is going to have income thresholds. So remember I said if you're married filing joint making under $315,000, you don't have to worry about all these limitations. If you're over $315,000 and you're a service business, all of a sudden you're impacted. So you really have to be careful. And there's new guidance recently issued that clarified how we're calculating some of this income that we're basing this credit on, the deduction, and it's a little bit more complicated as well. I mean, it's too complicated even to talk about on the show, I would say. Limits on deduction for meals and entertainment expenses. You really can't take it for entertainment anymore. Entertainment, amusement, or recreation. But you still can take up to a 50% deduction for the cost of business meals if the taxpayer or an employee of the taxpayer is present and the food or beverages are not considered lavish or extravagant, and it can't be part of the cost of the entertainment activity if you're doing it as part of an entertainment activity. You have to have a separate bill for the food and beverages, and you still can deduct half of it. There's pages and pages on this. This is available also on the IRS website under Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, a comparison for businesses. Things about net operating loss that in the past we carried back a couple years, then carried forward. Now, going forward, we're only going to carry those net operating losses forward. Deductions for expensing certain business assets. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act temporarily allows 100% expensing for business property acquired and placed in service after September 27, 2017 and before January 1st, 2023. And then there's all kinds of other, bumper guards around all that. Changes to rules for expensing depreciable business assets. That's called Section 179. They increase the maximum deduction to $1 million. And again, it is for non-residential real property. So your rental properties, you're not going to be doing that. So lots of changes, folks. It did not get simpler. It got more complicated. I hope I didn't throw people off too much. It's just about awareness and trying to make sure that you're not assuming that you can't itemize, that you're not assuming that you shouldn't track these, certain deductions anymore. So just be aware and not assuming that you can deduct everything either, because there were a number of changes that you can no longer deduct. As I mentioned, things like the line of credit, if it's not if it wasn't secured because of a home acquisition or improvement. All right? Folks, next week we are going to have listeners' tax questions, so I hope that helps. I think the people are starting to get their documents now. We're starting to get more coming in, and people are asking more questions. So listeners' tax questions next week. If you don't have them, I'm sure I'll have a handful to come in with as well. But you just call in like usual or send the questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and I can address the questions next week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank the listeners for calling in tonight. The questions, Wendy and Michelle, thanks a lot. And Lori, thanks for being here, taking the calls. Shandi, thanks for doing the board. Folks, remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.